Ladies and gentlemen and others, you are listening to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Mr. Marvin B. And tonight, we don't have the M&M show. And sad to say, we don't even have the M&M show. But what we have is the MJ show. And if you're thinking that's Michael Jordan, well, you can just call us the Michael Jordan of Podnuts. So it's Mr. Marvin B. and Mr. John Dubinsky. John, how are you?
Great. I'm happy to be here. I'm not quite sure you guys are the tech you're looking for, but I'll be the best Padawan I can be tonight, and we'll just get through
really?
It.
Just going to start early with the Star Wars?
Hey, it's the sweeter version of the M&M show, M&J.
Yeah, well, as long as you don't quiz me, because there were no Star Wars shows for me to have.
I have totally exhausted my Star Wars knowledge in that opening monologue, so we're good to go.
All right, so John, I asked you to come on because Matt is away on vacation, and the reason he's away on vacation is because he gets so much vacation, and I guess that's the benefits of having techs that work for you. You can do those sorts of things. You and I don't really have that option. So, let me ask you, how do you take your vacations?
Well, I usually take my vacations, what I would call maybe in bits and pieces, meaning schedule them around another holiday. You know, like 4th of July, this 4th of July would be great if I was actually going anywhere. With the 4th following on a Tuesday, I'm finding a lot of clients are closed on that Friday and Monday. So there would be a nice 5 days that you could sneak in. But primarily, since I'm a solo tech, I have partnered with another local service firm that does what I do to cover me when I'm gone. So if it's something where I need boots on the ground, I can dispatch them to any of my clients.
All right. So you pretty much do what I do. You take long weekends whenever you get the chance and call in your buddies to cover you when they can.
That's right. You got that.
And that sounds...
I don't know of another or better way. If somebody else had a better solution, I wish they'd tell me. I would honestly say that's probably the biggest downfall of being a solo tech, is there is no week-long vacation with the phone turned off and no monitoring of anything.
You know, there was a company that I had spoken to many years ago, and I know that they're not around anymore, but there probably is somebody out there like this. But basically, it was probably a big boy version of Chris's remote support tech team, where they would basically be your backup for anything. And it wasn't just for vacation or time away. It would be, you know, if I wanted to, say, have a particular customer have help desk all day long, this company would basically be an extension of me to where they can call any time to get support. And at the time, I mean, there was, I don't know, it was probably 50 or so employees at this place. And so they did a lot of that for people in our area. And I don't know how big they were in terms of what area they covered. The only downside was they did have two locations, but none of them were close to me. So that was my only downside, was that nobody could go on site in a pinch if needed. But I'm sure somebody's going to come up with that.
Well, I think Chris has a pretty good thing going, but I just wonder how you do the knowledge transfer. Because a lot of the problems I deal with aren't specifically, you know, I can't print or those sorts of things. I would suggest they're more involved and require maybe more of a knowledge transfer. And maybe those one-off things don't happen as much to justify something like Chris or another company. But then again, if I roll back, if you listen to a couple of the recent Mike Tech shows, he's singing Chris's praises about, you know, now he's gone on vacation and Chris has covered him very well. And now I guess he's on his way to Germany for a week or something like that. Chris is covering him. Plus, he does have one or two part-time employees, his son and another backup. So,
right. So it's a little bit.
He has a couple of people on board to cover him. But
yeah, that's a little different. If you have somebody local, and that was the thing with me. I've got a couple of guys local that it was an easier transfer of knowledge. But again, my law firms, they all don't have the same software. They all don't have the same needs. They work in different types of practices. So, you know, their questions are going to be a bit more detailed. And, you know, if, you know, they call the help desk and they're like, hey, I'm missing my association button for this program. You know, I don't have time to upload all of the help desk documents to this company. But again, if you could do help desk documents, well, that would be different. But a lot of this stuff, you know, you just can't go to a document and say, okay, step one, step two, step three, oh, you're fixed.
Yeah, and I think you got a great environment there to be with a lot of things with the VPNs and different locations you have going on. And, you know, maybe you're printing across that VPN or through remote desktop or, you know, something like that. So it might not just be the local network printer or even the USB printer. It could be something that's some sort of network printing coming out of a different location. So,
well, here's probably the best case scenario of how I had to choose against having somebody help me who wasn't available all the time. Are they my biggest client? I think they're my biggest client again. I've got a couple that they swap places every so often. But the bottom line is they're a big firm. They actually are the ones that just opened the Pensacola office where I was up there a couple of weeks ago. So the case management software that they use, we had to do some jerry-rigging, and wasn't like MacGyver-type jerry-rigging. This was all supported jerry-rigging, but it wasn't supported by the software vendor, but it was supported by either Microsoft or some other company to where we could get support if we needed to. But that software couldn't work to all the other offices without me having to replicate data between five of the offices. One of the problems we always had is when we did have a software-specific support and one of their techs would remote in, they themselves did not have in their own documentation how my client was set up. So if a person was having trouble in, say, Orlando, you know, they're thinking that there's a software server version in Orlando that they just would. I'm like, no, you can't do that. The server's in Fort Lauderdale. This user's remote. Well, how are they remote on the network? Well, I'm replicating data. What do you mean you're replicating data? And you, having to explain that to the vendor, it was interesting.
Yeah, it's hard enough to even let the vendor know, let alone the third-party tech. I mean, we can boil that down to the simple thing when you call internet support for whatever provider you have, and they tell our end users to reset everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, so, yeah. 8x8, my favorite company in the world.
I laugh every time you talk about that.
I'm so, so sick of them. Sorry, 8x8, if you're listening, but you suck. All right. So why don't we do this? Let's, since we don't have, you know, the rainy story maker,
yeah, I have a story of the week.
Give us a story of the week.
All right. So I must say every time I'm driving in my car and I listen to you guys and we talk about users either flat out lying to us or maybe perhaps misleading us. I thought I had a great one this past week. I get a call, sales office, big distribution center. It's here in my hometown, and then they have about five locations. But one of the sales guys let the sales manager know that his laptop wouldn't boot. And just a week before, I had updated the endpoint protection and some other stuff on his laptop. So he says to me, well, whatever you did to my laptop last week, this 10 days ago, now my laptop won't boot. This is what the sales manager is saying to me. So I get a ticket entered. I do all that. I copy both of them on them, and I said, hey, you know, Ed, let me know when you can leave the laptop at the office and I'll buzz by and I'll check it out. And we'll do that. And I said, well, anything else going on? Anything I need to know about the laptop? No, nothing. So I roll out there. I take a look. I go after hours. There's nobody else there. And my story is not going to justify it because I don't have a picture. But literally, I go there, see the laptop on the desk. I lift the screen and there's the screen's not attached. The hinge is broken and there's just the cable. There's no hinges.
Oh, my.
So I get that. I kind of set that up and I look at the rest. This is a Dell Latitude 5530, I think it is. On the whole right side, like where the cooling grate is, all of that is gone. So the laptop has obviously been dropped from a very long distance. I'm surprised it will even power on at all. So I just replied back in the ticket. Basically, I said, Ed, sure there's nothing else you want to tell me about what's going on with the laptop? And needless to say, I really didn't hear anything else back, but the hard drive was shot in the machine. That's why it wouldn't boot. Not what we did 10 days ago, but I just thought it was really funny when I lifted up the laptop and the whole screen came up and all was the ribbon cable was holding it together. So,
oh my. So in that type of scenario, because obviously he didn't tell you about the true condition, do you have any sort of built-in contingency to bill extra for, you know, a stupid fee or anything like that?
Probably not in this case, because it's the manager that called me about it, and I'm sure he didn't even see the laptop. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it, but I'm sure he didn't visually see the laptop either in this condition. I don't know what the end user thought he was going to get away with. You know, like I would just get it working and return it to him this way.
Well, I'm sure, you know, a little I'm bit sure of he thought tape, it was, yeah.
Blue.
I'm sure he thought it was all under warranty, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's all covered. That's all covered. But normally, I know what you're getting at with the stupid tax. I don't have anything per se, but normally what I say, my problem children, I tell them, I say, if you don't stop touching it or changing it, then I'm going to bill you every time you touch it and change it and break it, you know, on top of what I already fixed fee bill you. Because, you know, you're making me come out here to fix more problems than what we really originally had.
Right.
You know, I have a couple of docs that love to be self-taught techs. And I don't know, like a simple thing, what like a intraoral camera on an operatory computer will stop working. And then by the time they get done, nothing works on the computer at all. You know, just because the camera was unplugged and all they had to do was reach back and plug it back in. Yet they unplug everything and then try to plug everything back in or something to that effect. So, you know, there's a little balancing act. You don't want to be a jerk to your best customers. And obviously, they usually get really nervous and panic a little bit trying to get things rolling as fast as they can. But, you know, if we just take a little bit of time, take a deep breath, get that camera plugged back in, saves everybody a little bit of time and money.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just trying to scroll through because I remember that happened to me just in the past week where I had to go somewhere. And I get there and I remember sending a text to the wife going, "You're not going to believe what this was." And if I'll find it later and we'll go into it. But it's just one of those. I'm like, I drove all the way out here for this.
Oh, I had a good one this morning. Their internet was down, and unfortunately, where the Comcast modem and phone equipment is out in the factory area, so it's not protected from everyone. You know, and it's one of those things where we boil it all down, and it was just that somebody. And it had to be somebody because it's not in an area where this could happen accidentally. Plus, you know, a network cable has a clip, but the connection from the router to the cable modem, the router is in a different area, but the Ethernet cable into the modem was pulled out just a touch.
Mm.
I mean, just enough though that, you know, there was no link light.
Right.
So, you know, I go there, I push it in, you hear the click and we're good to go. So, you know, somebody in the factory was having a little fun.
Oh, my. So I guess I do have a story, but it's not a great story.
Oh, come on.
But I'm going to tell it just to let, I mean, people know that we're human. I mean, you know, yes, we're putting together this podcast and we're, you know, trying to be on every week and impart knowledge. But, you know, sometimes even we have days like these and, or I should say nights like these. Because recently I was trying to finish up a project, and this was a project where the customer has two servers. They've got their main server and they've got a remote server. So the remote server is Windows Server 2003. Ooh. And I finally convinced them it's time for that to go. Their main server is 2008. So I'm going to bring in a new 2016 server, make that their new main server. Take their 2003 remote server, boot that out of there, and turn their 2008 server into the remote server. So I planned this over 2 weekends just to give myself, you know, a little buffer if something happens with the main server or I miss a file or some setting doesn't come over right, which glad I did because there was one file that was missed, but that's a whole different story. The story I'm going to say is one of the things that I did and that I normally do is sometimes on smaller networks, I'll just bring up the new server, transfer all of the services immediately, DHCP, DNS, you know, swap over the FISMO roles and do all that, and I'm done. Well, in this particular customer, because it was so complicated between multiple offices, multiple VLANs, a large DHCP scope, most of our customers aren't using that many IP addresses. This customer was using about 230 IP addresses between all of the stuff that they do, between their computers, their iPads, their guest access. There was a lot. So I figured, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to split the DHCP scope and let things transfer over slowly throughout the days. And then I'll basically increase. You know, I don't know if you've done DHCP splits.
Yes.
Okay. And you know, the default is the 80-20 rule. One server's doing 80, the other's doing 20. And then I would switch it to 50-50 and then vice versa, and then just slowly move everything over. The static IP address, the reservations, those came over. Everything was fine. So on a weeknight, I decide, well, I'm going to go ahead and switch everything else over.
Ooh.
So it's, you know, 10:30 and I'm plugging away and I'm taking out the DNS entries that I've got, you know, referring back to each server. And so I'm clicking along and all of a sudden I lose connection to the server. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if it just rebooted, because sometimes that happens. So I'm waiting and I'm waiting and the server doesn't come back up. Now I have a Watt box at this location. So I'm like, well, I'll just go into the Watt box, reset the power and hard cycle it. I'm waiting and I'm waiting.
Server. How far away?
It's only like 15 minutes.
Okay.
So the wife's heading into bed by this time. And I'm like, I got to go check a server. So I drive over and lo and behold, stupid me, instead of changing the DNS, I changed the IP of that server so that all of a sudden there was a duplicate IP address on the network. So that server just was like, somebody else is already here. I can't do nothing.
I'd be a liar if I said I hadn't done something like that too. So I feel your pain. At least it's 15 minutes away and not 15 hours.
Right. So I switched the IP and get everything back up and growing. So I'm happy. I'm like ready to go. And I look over and their phones are not working. Glad I decided to check, because there's 30 phones in this office. Voice over IP. So I go to the first phone and go in and look, and it had not gotten an IP from the new DHCP server. So I go in, do the reset of the NIC, boom, 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 reboot the phone. Good. So I'm like, all right, I'll just go phone to phone, reset this. So I get through about the first 16, 17 phones on one side of the office. They all come up great. I go walk into the other side of the office. And when I mean other side of the office, this customer literally has a suite of offices on one side of the building, and you have to traverse across the catwalk to the other side of the building into two other suites. So I go into the suites, start doing the phones. They start doing their restarting. I walk around and touch each phone, come back to the first phone. It's still not connected, waiting for network configuration. So let me tell you where I started. This is my 8x8 customer. So my first premise was these 8x8 phones. So I'm basically, you know, trying to reset. I'm bringing out the Fluke tools. I'm bringing out my guns. I'm testing connections. Connections are fine. My Fluke is getting an IP address, but the phones are not. And all I keep thinking is my Fluke cannot be lying, because that would just be the worst thing in the world. So I spend probably another half an hour going back between these phones, trying to figure out what the freak is going on. Now, they're doing IP pass-through to the computers. So I'm logging into the computers. Computers are working. I'm getting on the internet, getting to their drives, getting to this. I'm thinking, okay, what is wrong with these phones? And out of the blue, just a thought popped into my head. I had these on a split scope. I wonder if we're out of IP addresses, because I did not reset the new server to now give IPs to the entire range. And what do you know? That was it.
And go figure that it's just the phones just happen to be the ones. So you wouldn't get a clue from the PC or something else.
Right. Because I, like I was saying, my Fluke don't lie. So the network was working just as it was supposed to. I just didn't go back and do my last part of the checklist.
So what are the chances? How did the Fluke pull one if the phone didn't?
Well, my guess is because I had used the Fluke there so many times before.
You know
how a computer will always try to use the same IP address it had. My Fluke, the same thing. And the Fluke was inside the portion of the scope that was being addressed. So basically, I'm, you know, trekking home. It's now well past 12:30. And the wife's like, what happened? And I'm like, you don't want to know. Go back to sleep.
You better not come home with some lipstick on your collar, right?
Oh,
So what, now do you have two ranges? Did you just do a subnet or expanded subnet, or did you just do two separate ranges, or how's the configuration look now?
Basically, I left it. It's one subnet. It's expanded.
Okay.
So that way they'll be able to grow and do whatever. But it was just one of those things where I had not, and probably it's something where had I not lost the connection, because of course my checklist was back at my home office.
Right.
So I, came back and I'm like, okay, now I can check that box. This is done. So, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, sometimes you just gotta.
Well, small blessing too, because if you wouldn't have showed up, the phones wouldn't have worked and you probably wouldn't have caught that.
Absolutely.
So knock on wood.
Blessing in disguise.
Right.
So that was my story. So, I mean, hey, not a great story, but live and learn. As Hootie.
No, that's a great story. I like that because I'm living that dream. I've lived that dream before when you're running around at midnight somewhere.
but the whole sad point is I'm sitting here thinking I'm plugging my Fluke in and I can't find the problem. Man, am I going to get some hazing for that.
Yeah, say it ain't so. That's right. Well, speaking of the Fluke, I got to give you a shout out and a thanks for another recommendation you and Matt talked about, because I jumped on the Active Data Studio from Elsoft.
Ah, yes.
The best thing about that product is it's probably the combination of everything that it does in one product.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the disk wiping, the disk imaging, plus the slew of other tools that they have in there, which I think now that I've got about, a couple weeks under my belt with it, I really like and I really enjoy. One product that updates itself, some Windows programs, bootable media, a price that $200 for that, for a technician's license.
Well, yeah, if you buy
I think I paid $20 extra for 2 years of free updates.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, high five on that. That's win-win for everybody. Obviously, I'll send over some information for the show notes on that, but that's just boot-disk.com, and it's the Active Data Studio, which is the technician's version that includes everything. But that was sweet. That's a high five on that. Yeah. I probably looked at that page 100 times when I've looked at the EASIS page, the AOMI page, the LSOFT page.
Right, right.
Looking at all the associated products that do the things that we look for. And I don't know why I've never pulled the trigger before, but after you and Matt were talking about it, and you give it a thumbs up, that's a bandwagon I was happy to jump on. That was good to go.
I put it in the category of D7 or FABS, even though those aren't, in the same type. It's one of those things where you hear about it, you may even see it, but until you actually use it, or until somebody tells you, hey, you got to do this and here's why, and you get a specific, I could use that. Let me at least try it. And it's one of those things where once you try it, which is the same with me. I mean, basically the original reason I got it was for a password reset. And at the time, all of these products, you could buy them individually. So I just bought the password reset disk, because that was all I needed. And I probably paid, $59 for that. But then the next time I went back, then I'm like, let me try this. And so I finally got to the point where, just buy the whole freaking suite.
I think it's a bargain. And it has definitely slid into my top 10 of most used tools. And then one of the beauties of it is, since it's all in that one product and they seem to maintain it and update it very well, you don't have to worry about patching any of your other stuff or updating your other stuff. If you use one product for, Derek's Boot and Nuke, you don't have to track that versioning and upgrading. I really like some of the professional features in it, as well as, if you do have to provide a printout after the disk wipe, that was a pretty cool feature. But yeah, it's in my top 10 list for sure, along with the things we talked about, like FABS and all that, no doubt.
All right. So so you do listen to the show and not just the...
I listen to the show and learn, Marvin, learn.
Listen and learn. Live and learn. Listen and learn. We're going to have all the, those aren't acronyms, but.
Yeah, that's not a YOLO, but that's all right.
YOLO.
Hey, and I'll circle back too on something else if you want. We can talk about another two of our favorite products, Arachnus and OpenMesh.
Okay.
But I don't know if you saw that CE Pro, magazine came out with their top 100 home networking brands.
No, I haven't.
So, basically, if those listening don't know, CE Pro is Consumer Electronics Pro, and it's a magazine geared towards home installers that do what I would call professional installations of home automation, home networking, the good stuff, not the pizza text we're talking about. But an interesting article in their ratings, the Arachnus Wireless actually jumped above the Ruckus Wireless in their ratings.
Say it isn't so.
Say it isn't so. So, you know, because Ruckus has usually always been my fallback when Open Mesh wasn't the solution I was looking for.
Well, and that is mine too. Open Mesh first, Ruckus for the big boys.
You know, and I haven't proven that out, what's in their article. I don't have a huge installation of the Arachnus access points anywhere. Based on seeing this article and all that, though, I did pull my Open Mesh out of my own office and put in the Arachnus access points, and I've had very good luck with them. I'm not saying in any way that it's going to replace my Open Mesh installations, because you can't beat the cloud controller and the visibility and the ease of setup that gives you. But I do say that, or you know, it's just another notch or another recommendation for those Arachnus products at their price point and what they can deliver, because they are very nice. But I thought that was interesting, and I'll shoot you over the link to that for the show note.
So actually, here's what I think. I think that there are a lot of products out there. I mean, a lot of people like Ubiquiti, a lot of people like Meraki, some of the others out there. And I think what happens is Ruckus is kind of like the, you know, you can go in and you can buy just the Toyota Corolla, or you can buy the JM Lexus, you know, or what is they have, even the Avalon, is that the higher end of the Toyota?
The Avalon, that is the high-end Toyota, yes.
And so I think Ruckus, in terms of price, that's where people see it. It's just, you know, to buy, I mean, I just installed a R710, it's $1,000. So when you look at an Open Mesh for $259, and I do know that the Arachnus products are right around there as well. But if you stack Arachnus up against Open Mesh, Arachnus is probably better performance. So I could see it jumping up over Ruckus, mainly because if you get good performance at a good price, that's going to do it most of the time for the tech world, especially the smaller techs, solo like us, pizza techs, not so much.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, Arachnus is a better solution than Ruckus at any point of view, but it seems like they're pretty solid, or have become more and more solid. And you do get a lot of bang for the buck, just like you were saying, you know, with their OVRC or Oversee Cloud, the notifications, a lot of the free things that you get with every networking product that has that enabled. So that's pretty nice as well.
So now, how long have you had the Arachnus Wi-Fi?
I've had the Arachnus Wi-Fi in my office probably about 3 weeks now.
All right. Now, do you have anything that you can actually test performance with?
I have not done that. This is just pure, you know, my office, my home office, and having a teenager and the wife and streaming and all that. I've noticed definitely no performance degradation, maybe even a little bit of improvement. Really, what I was looking for with my Arachnus distribution here is, I don't love doing Open Mesh when I do VLANing. I prefer to have the Ruckus or some other on-prem access points when I do VLANs, just for ease of configuration with VLANs. Not that you can't VLAN Open Mesh, but for some reason, I haven't had great luck with that. So,
Interesting.
Now, with the Open Mesh, you know, it eliminates a lot of the need for some VLANing with the way that you can distribute their SSIDs and their private networks there. But if you do the true VLANing and shared VLANing, I like having an on-prem access point that way.
Well, here's what I think. Open Mesh is quick, simple, good Wi-Fi.
Agreed.
And it's something where you can, you know, even if you don't pre-configure it, you can send it on site, have somebody plug it in, give you the MAC address, and boom, you're up and running. And I mean, that's just, but it's not the big dog workhorse when you're talking about doing, you know, extensive true networking where you want to control the VLANs and you want to do, you know, proper bridging, because you can only bridge one of the SSIDs anyway.
Correct.
So there are some limitations. It's going to get better, but you're right. So
that's a true statement there, because I don't know if we think back to the first time we deployed Open Mesh, if you went a couple versions of hardware compared to now, I mean, if they do the same over the next 1, 2, 3 years, the improvements that they've done so far, I mean, it's pretty fantastic right now. And the way they seem to be working at it, it's only going to get better.
Yeah. All right. So Arachnus Open Mesh. I'll have to, you know, I'm a big Arachnus guy, and I know that...
it's the only switches I sell anymore.
It's the only switches? Nice. Are you doing the managed switches?
Small offices get the 110s with the overseer, but other than that, it's 210s or 300s for sure everywhere.
I'm 300 everything. Yeah. Even if I'm doing an 8-port switch, it's a 300. But again...
You like to fluke it, baby.
Yes, I need to be able to walk in and fluke it. So, yeah, that'd be nice.
I'm a big fan of a couple of the bigger offices I've got. I've got their 48 port and the 300s in, and that is just a beauty.
All right. The Arachnus. Oh, I'm telling you, when I jumped on the Arachnus bandwagon is when I was doing on aisle 8 with the Watt box.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hadn't have started with the Watt box, I don't think I would have moved over to the Arachnus stuff. And I mean, Watt box baby is all I can say. Bada bing, bada boom. If you don't have a Watt box in your networks where you need them for your clients, especially in remote offices, you are doing yourself a disservice for the price. I mean, two trips will repay the Watt box, or one trip, depending on how much you charge.
Yeah, there's got to be some line you draw on a map that says, how long does it take me to get to the office that I'm servicing? If it's further than that, it gets a Watt box or something like that, or some rule of thumb. Or I'm with you, B. I'm even to the point where just every client should have one. So why not?
Well, even my client that's 15 minutes away.
Right. Yeah, you had a Watt box. Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking I don't want to drive over there if something happens in the middle of the night or the weekend or whatever. I'll just log in and reboot it, which... You know, if you've got, now granted, Wattbox isn't going to take care of every single situation, but if you've got, say, a server, an older server that gets hung up and, you know, needs to reboot every now and then, and with the way that the Microsoft has been putting out patches lately, and you reboot and it gets stuck at 30%, and it gets stuck at 30%, and it gets stuck at 30%, I mean, what do you do? You know, all you can do is hard boot it. So either you drive there to reboot it, or you tell a customer to reboot it. But here's my thing. I'm not having any of my customers ever touch a server.
Well, that's a nice thing about the Wattbox feature, where they can push button restart what you have programmed.
Yep. So,
well, here's a little add-on to the Wattbox story. So I do have a customer with a Wattbox, and I got a bunch of notifications that everything was down at that location. Could not get to the Wattbox. So just for fun, I went out to our electricity provider, who is Consumers Energy here in Michigan for most of the state. And I didn't know this, but they actually have a mobile app and a web page where you can put in an address and they'll tell you if that address has power. So I don't know why I think this is so sweet, but I just put in my customer's address and then I could see that there was a power outage there in the area that the power outage was in. So I didn't jump in my car to go see what was going on. It was after hours. Nobody was there. So, you know, if the Wattbox can't save you, maybe just check in to see if the power is out, even if you can't contact somebody. So that was kind of handy. And then it allowed me to put in a little notification to ping me via cell phone when the power came back on there. So I don't know what energy providers in all areas provide, but I thought Consumers Energy here in Michigan, that was pretty sweet.
Well, I can tell you this, now that you've said that, down here, Florida Power and Light has just started advertising that for your home, you can have FPL send you a notification if power is out at your house.
Sweet.
My first thought is, well, if I'm at home, I know when the power's out. But of course, what they're doing is they're showing people out having a good time, and, you know, the mom's out with the kids and she gets a notification, power's out. Oh, well, I won't go home. I'll just take them for ice cream. And then when the power comes back on, I'll get a notification and then we can go. So now I'm thinking, okay, you mentioned that where you could do that for your customer. I'm thinking, okay, I wonder if I could just set up an alert for all my customers to come to me.
That'd be, yeah.
I mean, that way, if, you know, a customer calls in, you know, middle of the day, you know, hey, we're down. Yeah, well, you're out. So
go get some ice cream.
That is, let me make a note of that. Is that customer notifications? I tell you what, customers love when you know things before they do.
Yeah, I love sending that text or making that call or sending that email, and then they say, "How do you know?"
Yeah, I had a not for. So I've got a 2-in-1. I told you I didn't have stories, but I guess I do. So I've got a customer. They're not for profit, so they're not on the high priority list, but they are a maintenance agreement customer. So I do have them on my managed plan. I have them in the RMM. So I called the other day because I didn't see their server. And she's like, oh, I was just getting ready to call you. She goes, it's on the screen doing this. And basically she goes, we weren't sure what to do, so we were going to call. And I said, well, tell me what's on the screen, blah, blah, blah. So we try to do a restart because that's a customer that does not have a Wattbox. But they were so used to rebooting their server before. I mean, I have no issue with them doing it. So they did it. We power cycled it. It was coming back up, got to the time on the screen, you know, for 2012, and we're thinking everything's okay. So she goes back to her desk and she starts to log in, and oh, there's still red X's on the drive. And wait a minute, the server's making that noise again, like the jet engine's taken off. So something was going on where it was rebooting. So I happened to be out of town. I mean, not really out of town. I wasn't in Pensacola. I was in Miami, but I'm still basically an hour from the customer. So not only did it look good that I called, but I was able to say, you know what? You've got 24/7, 4-hour support from HP. So even if I, you know, pack up from where I'm at, go to your office, try to figure out what's going on, I think we're still going to have to call HP. So here's your HP Care Pack number. Here's the support number. Go ahead and call them and they'll come out and take care of you. They did. Customer's happy. I didn't have to, you know, scramble for the day and panic, because what it ended up being, they had to replace the entire system board. And because if I had gone there and if I hadn't gotten them that support from HP, Lord knows how long it would have taken me just to figure out what the system board is, contact HP to verify that that's the right one, then try to contact a distributor to get it to me, and it would have to be overnighted.
So, yeah, it's not going to be 4-hour support, that's for certain.
No. So they just loved it. So getting the notifications so that I could call them, hey, you got a problem, I can help.
That's another nice thing about those Arachnid switches with the monitoring, you get an overseer.
Yep.
For free.
All right. So we've got story time. Poor Matt's not going to want to come back. We're taking over story time. Let's see. I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't have notes. I was like, on to the next step, but I don't.
Well, I can. Customer hit me with a new service that I'd never heard about called Bio Big Box. Now, you and I were talking about this a little bit before the show.
Yeah,
you and I do a lot of HIPAA stuff, but I'd never heard of this Bio Big Box. It's called the HIPAA compliant digital solution to send and receive files, quote unquote, at no cost. There's a free plan. Is where it starts. And they're saying they're HIPAA compliant. You know, you can send and receive files up to 1 gigabyte in size, share links that never expire. You know, a little bit of it sounds too good to be true, but. Mm-hmm.
Well, especially when it says, click here for your own HIPAA compliant private file transfer page. And I know you've said it, and I say it all the time. I'm never going to tell a customer they're HIPAA compliant 100%.
That's right. Usually those are words that say HIPAA compliant, you know, those are danger words to me, because what is compliant today is usually not tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. But this looks pretty nice. I will need to vet it, obviously.
Right.
What I was looking for was the cost, and on their plans.
If you go under plans, it goes anywhere from free to
enterprise
$50
at $50 a month. Yeah. So it's pretty much, I'll be honest, it looks like it's the same type of structure as send this file, which is what
Anything like that. Or yeah. Citrix has a solution and all that. They're just trying to push their, looks like their compliance.
I like that they say supersized storage under the pro version.
Right.
Super.
And you can add more space per, so about $15 a month for 100 gigs. So it's a little pricey, but if the HIPAA tag actually fits, you know, it's something to check out.
Well, here's the thing. Did you go down to the bottom? So the large file upload is 5 gigs per file. File and backup storage is 90 gigs. And then email storage is 10 gigs. I don't know what they're going to do with email storage, but I've sent bigger files through Send This File.
I use WeTransfer is what I've been using. not under the compliance, but when I need to send something that another mail service can't receive or I can't. You can receive HIPAA compliant email for free. You can send and receive under their base, under their paid plans.
So does that mean you can get an email address with them?
It appears that way.
Oh, you'll have to ask because I'm sure they're already on your list to call, right?
I will do the research and report back.
Oh yeah. So the send this file, basically they're the same pricing. It's until you get to the enterprise. The enterprise is $100 a month on send this file. So you could save $50 a month by going to the bio big box. But I was trying to look for the file transfer size. And they don't have it within clicking distance, so we'll just move on.
Looks like they've been around for a while, at least 2015. So
yeah.
That's a long time with the HIPAA tag, I guess. 2 years.
Yeah. So you said you've listened to our show. You know, I listen to the live show too still. And I heard you guys a while back talking about tools you use, and I heard your HIPAA show, and I had notes somewhere of stuff I was going to ask you, because I thought I would be back on the live show, but Hefe blew me off on Father's Day when I was available.
We didn't have a show on Father's Day.
I'm sitting there thinking, oh, I'm free this Sunday, and he's like, nope, it's Father's Day. I'm like, oh, crap. But one of the things, one of the notes I do remember is you had mentioned that you were using the DICON disk duplicator.
I was using the DICON. I do not use it much anymore.
And which is the same boat I was in, because I remember getting all excited about it and then not being so excited about it.
Exactly. Yes, my feelings exactly.
And so I heard you, you had mentioned the software, which that was my biggest pet peeve with that company, is that the software just didn't work. Is that what you found, or was it something else lacking?
No, if we start at the beginning, the actual dock itself and the functionality of that, I would say that was good quality for the price that you were paying. Speed was good using the dock itself. But yes, the epic fail is when you tried to get their software to do anything. And even, trying to look for an updated version, trying to go to the DICON site and figure out what you need to download to work with the particular dock you have or update the software that you have, that's even kind of a nightmare. If you go to the download page, it's not even... You remember your old white website, B?
Do I?
That's kind of what you're looking at here.
Paco complains about it every chance he gets.
So yeah, I became very disinterested and frustrated with the unit when I tried to use the software. I'm in the same boat too. Yeah. I mean, I don't even think I ever got it to successfully wipe a drive.
I did, which is one of the reasons I got so excited. It worked for probably a couple of months and then just stopped. Now, which model did you get? Did you get just the dual bay, or did you break out the cash and go for the Pro Plus?
No, dual bay.
Okay. Well, the reason I fell in love with it was the Doubler Dock Pro was a 6-bay unit where you could copy up to 5 disks at a time. And I actually still do use that because it works just like any of the other docks where you can just simply hit a button and it'll do the sector by sector, straight copy. So I do still use that. What I was really hoping to do was to use that software to, basically do what the active boot disk does, right? Where, the kill disk is actually the software inside the active boot studio where it'll print out the page for you. And I thought, man, if I could do, if I could wipe 6 drives at a time and get 6 certified pages.
That gets me excited.
Yes. And that's what I was hoping for. And it worked. I used this to wipe a single drive. Like I said, the software worked a couple of times and I only got it to work once with all 6 drives. And I was just so bummed after that. But
I don't think I ever got the disk erase. And I know there was 2 other things included with it. Is there some clone software which would let you do the clone?
Yeah, from
to different sizes, maybe, or something. Yes. It was supposed to do that. Yeah. And then there was some sort of copy software as well or something. I didn't even play with those. I got so frustrated just that I couldn't erase a drive that I was like, you know, that's it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was called, there's Clone Drive Plus was the one software. And then they had Disk Erase. And then the other software was called Flash Copy, which I think was for their USB duplicators. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yep.
So Podnuts Nation, I know that I hyped that product on you a few years ago. I didn't think anybody else was still using it, which is why I never wanted to bring it up. But I still have it, but I don't use it as much as my SysStor drive now. That thing is fast. I cloned a drive in 6 minutes the other day.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that. That just makes you feel good.
It wasn't a big drive. I mean, it was probably like, I don't know, 80 gigs worth of data on there or whatever, or maybe 100. But I mean, 6 minutes. I was like, man. So I love that.
So is it worth looking at a different dock? Maybe, you know, you guys mentioned the Kangaroos being a little bit better quality. You know, they have a dual bay.
I'll be honest, for the dual bays, I'm fine with the StarTech.
Really? Okay.
Because I don't use that much. Now, for somebody else, I mean, if you're going to use the dual bay a lot, maybe you look at the Kangaroo as your step up dock. You know, the high end of the StarTech, I don't think lived up to the hype as that mid range. What is it? The 2200 series on the StarTech page.
Well, the Kangaroo dock's under $100 too. The dual bay. I'm sure that, I mean, they have, just like you mentioned, a lot of higher end stuff, but.
Yeah. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. I heard you mention that. I had to kind of take a double take. I'm like, what? Did he really say that was one of his?
Well, I bought the Diacon when you were pimping it because I was looking for the same things you were looking at.
Mm.
Yeah, that's in the closet collecting dust, I believe.
All right. The other thing I heard you guys talking about, and this may have been the last show because I don't listen to them in order. I just, whatever comes up on the podcast, I mean, because I'll jump back and forth between several. But somebody had phoned in asking you guys about contracts. Does that sound familiar?
Good call. Yes.
And you guys were talking about, you know, to for him to start off with, you know, not to get too complicated with the contract and not to promise too much, which has always been my mantra. Don't oversell. Don't overpromise. And one of the things that I made a note here, and I don't know why I didn't write more, but the only thing I have is where I said no SLA. And I think that was a question that I wanted to follow up with you guys on is, I know that you mentioned to the, I think the caller's name was Chris, where you guys were saying, you know, don't tell people you're going to respond in 4 hours if you can't respond in 4 hours. Somebody had asked me a while back about, you know, it was a customer who I was referred to and they still haven't signed anything and they're not really my customer. But one of the things they asked is, well, what's your response time? And I said, depends on the issue and depends on what else is going on at the time. I would not give them an answer because I basically told them I don't guarantee response times. I don't have any SLA for anything for any client. Everything is my best effort. And that goes the same for.
And that's a term we used a lot on the show there, I believe, best effort.
Okay. So I was going to ask you, do you have any SLAs for not just response time, but for any portion of your agreements?
No.
Not even for one customer.
I've never been pressed on it either.
Well, what about if their customer gets a virus, do you clean it for free?
Depends on the agreement I have with them, but with most of my customers, that is included for free.
Okay. I will clean some for free, but if you get ransomware and you don't have a Datto backup in your network, then it is not for free.
Well, and that fits exactly with what I do. In order to be flat fee or how I bill or retainer or whatever we're going to call it with me, I mean, you have to meet the list of requirements. And one of those requirements is adequate backup for me to restore from. You know, if we can circle back on this a little bit too, you know, with HIPAA compliance now, I've had a couple docs that, you know, I've had to have them respond to an email that basically says to them, since you don't want to do this, keep in mind that this makes you non-compliant, which therefore makes me not responsible for anything that may be compliant related in your office or compliance related in your office. You know, respond back that you understand this. So, you know, it's those sort of things. I don't particularly think you need to write a contract for every small, minute thing that might happen, because you're never going to catch everything. And then if you ever want to go back and change that contract, that's just going to be a mess. So, you know, take those things as one-off. And I think if we go back to Chris, he was just starting off. You know, you got a lot of energy and a lot of free time when you're just starting, because you're not doing anything, right? So you tend to overpromise, and, you know, heck, I can make it there in 4 hours. I'm not doing anything.
Well, of course, yeah.
You know, once you get 50 clients and 1,000 computers to manage, you're not going to have as much free time. So careful what you promise.
Yes.
And it's very hard to be two places at the same time, even with remote access.
Yep.
So
here's a question I'll ask you. So I've got one customer who I will not offer to sign a BAA with them, a business associate agreement. Even though they're a medical office, they refuse to do half of what they should be doing for any of their security HIPAA stuff. The only thing they have done is allow me to put in a backup, a device, and get secure mail, separate their staff Wi-Fi from their guest Wi-Fi, and encrypt one server data drive. And to them, they think, well, that's all we need to do. And I said, well, no, you have all these other things that you need to do with identifying your security officer and coming up with your response plans and your breach policies and securing your USB drives, because they walk around with tons of USB drives, sticking them every which way they can. and they're like, well, we're not going to do that. So basically, and I probably need to talk to more people and probably talk to my attorney. but basically, I'm like, well, I've got a list of stuff here that I know that I can help you secure. And if you say no to any of these, I'm not signing that BAA, that agreement. And they've kind of been like, okay. Now, I know at some point there will be a HIPAA ruling that will say to us as the IT provider, it doesn't matter. You're responsible. I don't know when that day's coming. I don't know, you know, how it's going to be, but do you have scenarios in which you're not signing a BAA for your customers, or you're taking a hands-off approach? Well, if you're not going to be compliant, I'm not going to worry about it.
That is a great question that we could probably do an entire show on.
That's why I saved it for
failure
last.
To sign, or the refusal to sign, as far as I read the regs and what from I've heard of other people, does not protect you and me. All right. It's our level of compliance. So since we work with covered entities, the practices that we work for, you know, we have the need to be HIPAA compliant. So it's my understanding that if something were to happen, as long as, again, you want to cover yourself with documentation on this and communication, which I'm sure you've done, B, with your client. But as long as the breach is not due to the failure of your compliance or anything that you've done there directly, then that should be enough to protect you. That does not mean you're not going to get wrapped up in some sort of lawsuit or something, because anybody can sue you for anything.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when you walk into the courtroom or you deal with a mediator or something to that, you know, you just want to have the ability to wipe your hands or wash your hands of it and say, hey, that wasn't our breach. We told them to do that. It's not a failure of our compliance, meaning we are compliant. We have documented this is what we did. We told them to do that. Here's where they refused to do it. So just because you don't sign doesn't really protect you. But I don't know if I would sign a BAA that's, you know, it depends on what that BAA contains. If it says, hey, we're HIPAA compliant because we're doing all this, and you sign it falsely knowing that they're not, then I wouldn't sign it.
Well, yeah, I'm never doing that for anything, HIPAA or not HIPAA, just.
You know, and that brings up a whole nother argument about BAA. So back in the day when this all started, everybody used the exact same boilerplate BAA that was about a half a page. Yep. It basically said, hey, we're happy HIPAA people and you're happy HIPAA people. Let's work together to protect patient data and information. Yay. Well, now if you see some of the BAAs that I've been handed, you know, there are multiple pages. And there's all that legalese that says, hey, it's not our fault. It's your fault. Sign here. Thanks. You know, that everybody's trying to push that liability off themselves with a BAA onto somebody else.
Absolutely. That's where I think it's really going to start to change here in the next couple of years, that, you know, those agreements are going to be, I mean, they're going to be worse than home warranty contracts, you know, or car contracts when you buy a car and you're signing page after page after page. They're going to start to be like that, I think.
I'm really surprised that HHS or OCR or one of the bodies, governing bodies of HIPAA, doesn't have some sort of standard on that, because there's so much misunderstanding about HIPAA just on its basic level and what offices and covered entities and BAs are supposed to be doing that, you know, how can you write a legal document that says, here's our agreement based on what we understand, even though we don't totally understand everything.
Right. So, well, here's what I think is going to start to happen. Now, one of my clients, another law firm, is getting ready to be audited by their client. And the way that that happens is my customer is an insurance defense firm. So insurance companies are coming to them to say, you need to secure our data that you have. So all of our case information, all of our client information, you need to prove that you're protecting it just as much as we're protecting it. So all of those HIPAA security, you know, regulations are now being pushed onto this law firm. So, and what they've done is, this is how I think that HHS is not really doing anything, because the company that's doing this is a pretty big company. And basically, I was on a phone call with them today, and they said, well, have you looked at the ISO 2700 security documents? That's what we go by. And there's about 100 and something points that we're gonna ask you to look at and say whether you've done this or not. That's all done by paper. You just basically say, yes, we do this, no, we don't, or not applicable, or partial, meaning we're not there, but here's what we're doing to get there. Then what they do is they say, okay, in about a week, we'll send back 21 of those markers to say, send us your evidence. And it could be any one of those hundreds of compliance portions, where it could be as simple as, show us the physical security for your servers, meaning show us a picture of the door that locks your servers, or show us the screenshot of people having to put in passwords. I mean, he was going through, these are the types of things. So to some degree, these companies are kind of doing it themselves by going through this, you know, ISO certification deal. So I think that's how HHS is staying away from it, because they're saying, well, look, the big boy companies will take care of this for us, and it's going to be the little companies, like my dermatologic laser company, you know, where there's 3 doctors and 20 staff, and they're like, they're never going to come after us.
Right.
And all I say is, well, I'm an HP partner, I'm a Microsoft partner, I'm a Datto partner. I'm not losing my partnership with any of those for you.
Or my business, or my well-being, or my, yeah.
So.
Well, and I think we can wrap this whole discussion into some other things like credit card compliance, you know, PCI and all that. I just did an SAQ with a customer, which is the annual questionnaire you get for PCI compliance from a lot of providers. And one of the requirements that we could not get past was their PCI compliance SAQ required a FIM, which is a file integrity monitoring solution. So what a FIM does, for anybody that doesn't know, is basically monitors every file on a system, what is accessing that file, what that file is accessing, how that file has changed, you know, historically.
Who accessed it.
Yeah, who accessed, all that kind of stuff. So we're monitoring the integrity of an individual file. So I don't remember which, if this was OpenManage or which PCI compliance thing was, but if we checked no on that box, meaning saying that we did not have a FIM, it would not let us pass the SAQ. So that was interesting. So I don't know what we're going to do about that. I have to get a call into them, their provider, just to see if we're going to be installing some sort of FIM management software. Mm.
Wow. That ought to be fun. Now, the OpenManage stuff, I've looked at that. I've not actually used any of that.
Well, there's a lot of, like a lot of my dental clients use either XCharge or some other provider for credit card processing that then integrates with their practice management. And usually OpenEdge or some of these other third-party providers provide the PCI compliance. Or I think XCharge now has changed their name to OpenManage and they provide their own. So there's about 2 or 3 big ones that I deal with in the, what I will call tooth repair industry, dental, endodontic, orthodontic, that I run into a lot.
Trying to find, I just got 2 of my customers to agree to use an audit program. The full blown version of Event Sentry. And, Yeah, I've probably mentioned them before because I used to use their free product, which would, you know, for me at the time, going back, I don't know, 10 years ago, where what it would monitor is group policy changes so that if, you know, a person got added or deleted or a password changed, I could get notified of that. If there was something to do with Exchange to where something, but there were a few things that it did for free. And so I just used that. And that was a great way for me to, here's what I really used it for, is it would send me the notification. And that's what I would use to put in my QuickBooks so I could bill a customer. Here's what I did. And so, but now it does a ton of stuff where it will do complete auditing of, you know, all changes in Active Directory, user account management, machine name changes. So if you change a computer's membership in the domain, you'll get notified on that. So it's really great for, you know, IT departments. So if you need to know which tech is doing what, it'll send you that information and it'll tell you, you know, for instance, a user account was changed. Here's the security ID. Here's the tech that changed it, along with the time and all of that stuff. Now, in this program, you can actually do a lot more. And one of those things is you can do file monitoring from this program. I'm not turning that on because this customer that I'm using this at has about 4 million files. And there's no way that I could find space enough on my workstation to hold that file. But
I've been looking at maybe an addition, you know, this popped up earlier this month. So my endpoint protection provider is Panda, but they have a product called Adaptive Defense, which includes a FIM in it, which I've been starting to look at. I don't have really enough to report back on it, but I, you know, it adds a couple bucks to per month per endpoint. So I think it's something that we're going to start running into, especially if HIPAA starts demanding it as well.
Right. That's a discussion we're going to have off air because I have questions on your RMM change again.
I haven't changed RMMs in like 2 weeks. Come on, I've been rocking Panda for about 4 months now.
Really?
It's actually CentraTrack, which is Autotask PSA, but we'll get into that off air.
Yeah. Because you'll probably change by the time this...
That was just a little tease.
You'll change by the time this, you know, gets posted, so...
Hang on, I go. I'm rolling out something else. Hang on.
All right, so I think we've done pretty good. We're over an hour, which Matt and I do on a regular basis. I don't want to try to drag you out to our customary, you know, 90 to 120 minute segment, but
yeah, it's past my bedtime already. So, geez, I will throw out two other things. I just reread a really good book that I really love. That it's called The Phoenix Project. Mm-hmm. You read The Phoenix Project?
Let me see. It's not on my shelf.
It's actually pretty good. It's really about DevOps, but it's a novel. It's a story novel about basically an IT guy. What we do gets thrown, has a corporate job, gets thrown into head of IT for a large corporation. They're trying to roll out a brand new system that's not going well. Management isn't cooperating. Half the management is trying to go to a different direction behind the president's back. I mean, it's a lot of the topics we discuss about and how DevOps and processes and documentation and other things really help you win in technology and business. So I will send you a link for that for the show notes. But right. It's an entertaining book with a lot of stuff, not only about business, but about IT.
All right. Phoenix Project. All right. Book number one, book number two?
No, that's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay. All right. And I will not be reading a book until after the summer. So,
but that's an Audible book. So that's a car. I mean, it's printed or Audible. So that's a car book.
I'm sorry. That was Alexa interrupting our podcast. I purchased one of those things. And
we'll have to hook it up with my Google Home and we'll have it talk to each other.
I don't know if I'm going to keep the thing. I really can't find any use for it except playing music.
It's not a bad speaker, but are you pretty deep in the Amazon ecosystem?
Well, let me say no.
Okay.
Well, just because I'm not deep in any ecosystem, let's just be clear. I'm not one of these geek happy techs.
Right.
So I don't do a lot of gadgets and stuff. So I saw
I'm with
it.
You there. I meant more like, are you using Amazon Music? Do you shop a lot of Amazon? Are you doing...
Well,
you
know? I do use Amazon Music, and I will shop on the Amazon if it's a last resort or if the wife, you know, is looking for something. But it's not my go-to place. I'm not real big in stuff. And I'm not going to use any of the other gadgets that you can use with Alexa. I'm not going to use it to control my lights. I'm not going to use it to control my AC. I'm not going to use it to order pizza because I don't need Google knowing every single bit of information about me.
They already do, B.
I know, but it's one thing to see it on my webpage. It's another thing to have the pizza guy showing up at my house going, hey, your thermostat's low.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for the invite. I hope that I was an adequate replacement for Mr. Rainey.
Well, we will find
and I
out.
I hope you're going to pimp the unconvention here. And for anybody that shows up to the unconvention and says they heard this podcast, I will give them $1 in Washington.
You personally would give them $1?
Personally, I'll give them $1. So there's your teaser to get to the unconvention.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think I'm going to expect a flood of ticket sales. And to do those ticket sales, you need to go to unconvention.io. And I'm going to tell you to go, even if you've been there, go there anyway, because there's some new content on the website. We have updated the testimonials that you'll see on the website from people that were at last year's unconvention. And just so happens, and this was not planned, that one of the people on the front page of the testimonials is Mr. John Dubinsky, there in all of his glory.
The man, the myth, the maven.
Explaining what the unconvention means to him and why he'll be returning again and again and again. We've also updated the schedule and added some content to the workshops that we're going to be having. We have some expert presenters, some people that are not us, that will be participating and leading some of the sessions there. We've given some more information on the hands-on labs. They're going to be much, much better than last year. At least mine will be. I'll just say that. So head over to the unconvention.io website. And when you go to buy your tickets, please use the discount code PODNUTS. And that'll bring your ticket price down a little bit there. So you won't be paying the $249 price. You'll be paying $40 less. And just for
those... I'll just tack on to the end. I'm really excited for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, this is Unconvention 2.0. I am not presenting. So I am looking forward to participating. I got a lot out of the first one. Basically, you know, just, you know, there's a lot of collaboration in any conference you go to if you put forth a little bit of effort, but I would suggest the unconvention is probably the one convention you could go to and not speak to another person and still get a ton out of it. The other thing is you mentioned the presenters. I know David Sims, we talked a lot about HIPAA on this show. David Sims is what I would probably call a HIPAA godfather. He does the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, an excellent resource about that topic. Him and Donna Grindel, so I'll pimp them a little bit. So he will be, I mean, just a visit there for him, if you do anything with medical or HIPAA, you know, to meet him and pick his brain and do his presentation would be huge and worth just the ticket for that.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. So go out, get your DC Unconvention 2017 ticket. That is September 16th and 17th in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Salute. Okay. Also, if you are a regular listener to PodNuts, any of the shows, or you're just starting out and you want to contribute to PodNuts, head over to podnuts.com. And, you know, I didn't pay John to be here. And the main reason is because I don't have a budget to pay me or to pay John. But the network, you know, we do require a little bit of money to run these things. We need to be able to have a place to host these, to pay the websites and to get equipment so we can do this. So, when you head over to podnuts.com, on the right hand side, a little ways down, there is a subscribe or donate button. If you're a regular listener, $1 a month is all we're asking to support, the great network to keep these PodNuts coming. If you want to give a one-time donation and make it, you know, $10, $20, you can do that there. Please, head over to the website and do that. And be sure to listen to the other shows that are happening on there. You will see John on a regular basis on the Computer Repair podcast, a live show every Sunday. He's not there every Sunday, but he's there most. And so you'll get his wonderful insight on Sundays, along with Jeff, the El Jefe, Chris, Mr. Remote Support, and a lot of the other regulars over there. All right. That's all my pimping I'm going to do tonight. My last official duty will be to head over to get a quote from my good friend, Ben Franklin. John, have you been keeping track of the quotes there?
I have.
All right. So tonight's quote is, "A man wrapped up in himself makes a very small bundle." And with that, we thank you for listening, subscribing, and downloading the show. This is Podnuts Pro. And until next time, holla.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. I'd like to invite you to listen to all the great shows on the Podnuts Tech Podcast Network. My show is themed Everyday Tech for Everyday People. You can take a listen over at podnuts.com or by subscribing to the RSS feed and downloading them directly. We hope you're enjoying all the great content here on the network. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.